Well, here we are, 1 Samuel chapter 28 and 29. It's kind of hard to decide how to break up the story because we keep taking pieces and the story keeps progressing. So next Wednesday, we'll finish 1 Samuel. So tonight, we're going to see Saul now, who has made himself an enemy of the Lord, can't find that secret place. God has departed from him, and so now he's lost. He doesn't know what to do because he has forsaken the Lord, and the Lord has taken his spirit from him. And so life, we've just seen it with King Saul, just becomes a nightmare. He cannot find peace. He's ruled by his own desires for power, and he just wants to kill David because he knows the Lord has anointed David. That's all clear revelation to him. We already know this. We already know that Saul already knows that the Lord is going to remove him and replace him with David. And he still, even though God has revealed that to him, he still fights the Lord on what he knows is coming. And so David, if you remember last week in chapter 27, he said in his heart there, chapter 27, verse 1, and David said in his heart, "Now I shall perish someday by the hand of Saul." This is what we talked about last week. "I'm going to just go to the Philistines, so I'll escape out of his hand." This is not in character with the man of God that David is. Did he forget God's faithfulness looking back in the past? I don't know. Did he forget about the promises of the Lord in his life looking at the future? Possibly. He's at least acting like he forgot. And that happens, by the way, one step at a time. You find yourself in a situation and you've just gotten your eyes off the Lord. And the next thing you know, you're making decisions based on what you think rather than what the Lord is leading you in. This is not what God has for us. Faith obeys the Lord while it waits. But we also see the redemption of God in this situation. He's with the Philistines for a year, and this is bothering me. I don't know what's going on. Why is it way over here? Okay, let's try that. He's been in the Philistines now for a month and or a year and 3 or 4 months, something like that, it says there. And he's trying to fake everybody out. He's trying to make the Philistines think that he's out killing their enemies and the Jews and everything. Really, he's fighting against the enemies of the Jews and hiding it. He would destroy everyone in a town or a city so that there was no testimony that David did that. And he would lie about what he was doing. So they thought he was a friend to the Philistines, that he'd made himself an enemy of the Israelites. All this charade because of fear in his life. Now, the Lord was not going to allow Saul to kill him. The Lord had called David and removed Saul, but his fear got the best of him. So here he is in the middle of this situation. And chapter 28, verse 1, "Now it happened in those days that the Philistines gathered their armies together for war to fight with Israel. And Achish said to David, 'You assuredly know that you will go out with me to battle, you and your men.' And David said to Achish, 'Surely you know what your servant can do.' And Achish said to David, 'Therefore I will make you one of my chief guardians forever.'" So he has found a lot of favor in the eyes of Achish. If you remember, he was the king of Gath. And so that's when David first fled from Saul. He went to Gath and they recognized him. He's the guy that killed Goliath, you know. And so that's where Goliath was from, Gath. So he started pretending like he had gone crazy. And Achish was like, "Get this guy out of here." Well, now fast forward these years and he's back. And he's asked Achish to help him because of this. And he gives this whole charade of being the friend of the Philistines. So remember, David is in Philistine territory. So having refused to fight Saul because he will not lift his hand against God's anointed, that's his whole reason for fleeing. God has given the life of Saul into his hands, and he's not taken that opportunity out of honor for God. We talked about all this. But now, having refused to fight against Saul, being undercover, he's now confronted with having to fight Saul. This is what they're doing. They're gathering the Philistine army to go fight Israel, and they're saying, David, you're coming with us. Get your men. And David goes because it's his charade. So now his plan has backfired on him, and he's going to find himself, we'll see in chapter 29, having to go and fight, but God intervenes. So verse 3, and this is now meanwhile, right? Meanwhile, back with Saul. Now Samuel had died, and all Israel had lamented for him and buried him in Ramah, in his own city. And Saul had put out the mediums and the spiritists out of the land. So there's a little context here. Then the Philistines gathered together and came and encamped at Shunem. So Saul gathered all Israel together, and they encamped at Gilboa. So this is up in northern Israel, kind of where Nazareth is. Nazareth would be on the west side of the Jezreel Valley. And that's kind of north of that, and kind of the north part of the valley there. That's where Shunem is. And then Gilboa is on the other side of that valley. This is the valley of Jezreel, which is also the valley of Megiddo, and it's the same location of the Battle of Armageddon. So it's this huge valley up there, and for those of you that went to Israel with us, we were up in Nazareth, and we went out to where there's this place called the Precipice, which is this area kind of where you can sit and have a Bible study as you're looking over the cliff into the valley of Megiddo and Jezreel. And that's where they were going to push Jesus off the cliff, more than likely, from when he was in Nazareth and preaching, and they took him to the cliff to throw him off because he had said God loves Gentiles. They didn't like that, so they were going to kill him. And he hid himself from their midst, and just, I've preached there a couple times, and you turn around and you realize this is the valley of judgment that they were going to push him into. This is where God judges the nations in the future. So this is where this battle is getting ready to take place. Verse 5, when Saul saw the army of the Philistines, look at this, he was afraid and his heart trembled greatly. And when Saul inquired of the Lord did not answer him, either by dreams or by Urim, or by the prophets. So there's our clue on to how they would find out, God, what do you want me to do? They were waiting for that dream to come from the Lord, or they would consult the Urim and the Thummim, which we don't know exactly what that was. They were inside the breastplate of the high priest. We think that maybe it was a black and a white stone. Some people believe that the stones would glow based on the answer from the Lord. We really have no idea. But that was one way, and then also a word from the Lord from the prophets. None of that was coming to Saul. Verse 7, then Saul said to his servants, find me a woman who is a medium, that I may go to her and inquire of her. And his servants said to him, in fact, there is a woman who is a medium at Endor. Now, Saul, he's afraid. He's now being led by his fear. He inquires of the Lord, which was smart, but the Lord gives no answer, so he looks for a medium. He had gotten rid of all the mediums and the spiritists, so there was none there. But he just asked them to find one, and of course, there were still mediums in the land that were kind of hiding. This was their way of making money, you know, calling up the dead or whatever that was all about. And so they knew of one. Well, there is one over in Endor, even though she's not publicly a medium anymore because you threw them all out of the land. That's the idea, right? But Saul, look at this. He's afraid. He calls on the Lord. He doesn't get an answer. And so he goes to somewhere else to find an answer, and it gets dark, real fast. You see, the Lord proves that the flesh, remember, Saul is a type of someone who has the knowledge of God but doesn't respond in faith and walks in the flesh, right? So they have no excuse. They have the knowledge of God. The flesh cannot wait long enough. The flesh can't accomplish the things of the Spirit, and God is proving that to Saul. Saul, in your own flesh, you can't follow me. You can't wait long enough to hear from me. This was the problem when he was going to make the sacrifice before the battle occurred against the, I think it was the, was it the Amalekites? Well, there was that battle. Well, he was told to go conquer the Amalekites, we'll see. But there was the battle where he couldn't wait long enough to make the sacrifice because Samuel wasn't there yet. So he just said, I'm going to have to make it because everyone's leaving. They're so scared. I'm scared. So we're just going to make the sacrifice. And then Samuel showed up and said, you didn't wait long enough. The flesh never waits long enough. And if you think that you can accomplish the things of the Lord in the power of the flesh, guess what? God will prove it otherwise to you. You need him. You need him. And we need to live by faith because of faith obeys while it waits. So he asks here, verse 7, he asks for a woman who's a medium, and they know of one in Endor. I don't know if there's a reason he asked specifically for a woman who was a medium. I don't know if maybe that would have been less threatening to him, maybe. He disguises himself and all of that, and he goes to her here, verse 8. So Saul disguised himself and put on other clothes, right? He probably had kingly garments that he laid aside so that he wouldn't be recognizable. And he went, and two men went with him, and they came to the woman by night, and he said, please conduct a seance for me and bring up for me the one I shall name to you. And then the woman said to him, look, you know what Saul has done, how he has cut off the mediums and the spiritists from the land. Why then do you lay a snare for my life to cause me to die? And Saul swore to her by the Lord, saying, as the Lord lives, no punishment shall come upon you for this thing. It's interesting to me. Saul has forsaken the Lord. He's being navigated by his own flesh. He can't do it correctly, and he's willing to make a promise in the name of the Lord to a spiritist, a medium who's completely doing something that God forbids in his law. And here he is saying, yeah, I'll make you a guarantee in the name of the Lord. You know what we call that? Using the name of the Lord in vain, right? So just, you see what the flesh does. So Saul swore to her. Verse 11, and the woman said, whom shall I bring up for you? And he said, bring up Samuel for me. And when the woman saw Samuel, this is where it gets very interesting. She cried out with a loud voice. And the woman spoke to Saul, saying, why have you deceived me? For you are Saul. And the king said to her, do not be afraid. What did you see? And the woman said to Saul, I saw a spirit ascending out of the earth. So she recognizes that it's Samuel, that she's performing this seance, and in probably some kind of a vision or something, she sees Samuel coming up from the dead to speak with her. And she realizes who it is, and then realizes that it's Saul. So she's having an awakening here. Yeah, so I'm kind of bewildered by that Samuel actually showed up. Now, there are some commentators that say it wasn't Samuel. It was just the Lord giving her a vision. I don't even want to go there, because I believe there are dark forces that are called upon, and we see the fallout of that, even in our culture today. So anyway, so Saul's disguised himself. He's gone to her by night. So he's doing all of this, thinking that he's escaping what? The eyes of the Lord. Can you escape the eyes of the Lord? So all of his efforts are in vain. He's just completely lost in this darkness. Psalm 139, 12, right? Darkness is as day to you, O Lord. And then Luke chapter 12, verses 22 and 3, all is revealed. Whatever you whisper is going to be shouted from the housetops. So whatever Saul thinks he's doing in, okay, God didn't answer me, so I'm going to go to this medium and ask her to get Samuel for me. Samuel will show me what to do. Isn't that just crazy? But this is what the flesh does. Crazy. Crazy stuff. So Saul still wants answers, even though the Lord isn't speaking to him. If the Lord isn't speaking to you, I don't suggest you go for plan B. Don't get on the psychic hotline, right? It's very strange to me that he pursues another source when the Lord isn't speaking to him. But this is what the flesh would do. Seeking the Lord versus I need my issue resolved. So much of the time, and I know this has happened a lot with believers, where it's like, well, I prayed about it, but I don't know what the Lord's telling me to do, so I've got to do something. And they act out, and they just don't wait on the Lord. You know, I know there are certain things that are time sensitive, and we may need to make a decision, and I believe that sometimes we just step out in faith with what we believe the Lord is calling us to do, and the God who directs us is the God who redirects us, and all that's true. But there are times when the Lord simply wants us to wait until we hear from him. And that's when we must be spirit-led. So, God isn't speaking to him. He still wants answers. So he steps outside of God's will. By the way, the flesh never accomplishes God's will. Romans chapter 12, verse 2, do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. That's not something that's accomplished in the flesh. That's something that God does in his spirit through his word in our lives. Faith, the flesh never accomplishes the will of God. Faith accomplishes his will. Ephesians 6:16 says this, take the shield of faith with which you will be able to quench all the fiery darts of the wicked one. In other words, those lies and the temptations from the enemy, what gives us victory over that is to walk in faith, right? Taking that shield of faith. James 2, he's talking about faith and how you have to be able to express your faith through your works. He says, show me your faith without your works in verse 18, and I will show you my faith by my works. So faith accomplishes the will of God. Now, because he's in unbelief, that outward show of Saul's faithless rebellion continues. It started with that disobedience to his battle with the Amalekites, that, like Mary was saying. He was called to go to defeat the Amalekites. Remember, he brought the king back alive and all the cattle and the best of the land and everything. And Samuel says to obey is better than sacrifice. He said, oh, we were going to make a sacrifice. Well, to obey God is better than sacrifice. So it's continued now that he's showing that. And we'll see that that gets brought up as the reason God is judging him because of that failure with the Amalekites. So his heart is now revealed in his unbelief, which is ultimately revealed as rebellion. You've heard me say that a lot. Unbelief is ultimately revealed as rebellion because, and this is key, because the Lord has revealed himself and his will to us. If God didn't do that, if God didn't reveal himself to you and his will to you, then unbelief wouldn't be rebellion, right? You just, I don't know what to do. But because God has revealed himself, to not believe in the revelation of God means you have to push it away. So unbelief is ultimately revealed as rebellion. Jesus said in the Gospel of John, if I wouldn't have done the works that no one else would do, they'd have no sin. If I didn't say the things that no one else says, they would have no sin. But I have done those works. I have said those words. Therefore, they are in sin by rejecting him. So Samuel shows up to this medium, and she's shocked to see him, realizes that it's Samuel. And there's a little key here I want you to see in verse 13. Don't be afraid. What did you see? And the woman said to Saul, I saw a spirit ascending out of the earth. Now, you might have a note there that says Elohim. I saw Elohim and Elohim ascending out of the earth. That word Elohim is the name we use for God. But the reason it is because El means like a judge or a ruler. And so Elohim is the plural sense of that, which in plural sense adds great emphasis. And so that we use that word Elohim, which is plural, for God being the judge of all judges, the king of all kings, right? Lord of all lords. So, but what she's saying is there's some kind of a ruling influence, a God or a spirit, an Elohim, ascending out of the earth. You see, she sensed the presence of the Lord in Samuel coming up from the dead. And I'm going to guess this, that in whatever she's involved in, whether it's sham and she's never actually seen a spirit raised up, or whether it's just dark arts, whatever, whether it's real or not, she's probably never witnessed a righteous dead person like this. So she's having an encounter right now like she's never had before. And her response, seeing the holiness, sensing that presence of the Lord, his holiness, produces great fear in her life because she's never experienced anything like this. And so verse 14, he said to her, what is his form? And she said, an old man is coming up, and he is covered with a mantle. And Saul perceived that it was Samuel, and he stooped with his face to the ground and bowed down. So Samuel is not appearing to Saul. He's in this story communicating through this woman. So Saul is having to ask her, what do you see? What does he look like? And all of that, right? Does that make sense? Now Samuel said to Saul, why are you disturbing me by bringing me up? What's the phrase? Why are you disturbing my slumber? That's kind of what I hear there, right? Why are you disturbing me by bringing me up? And Saul answered, so this is intriguing as well. I am deeply distressed, for the Philistines make war against me, and God has departed from me and does not answer me anymore, neither by prophets nor by dreams. Therefore, I have called you that you may reveal to me what I should do. So Saul's, we're not guessing that that's Saul's intention. He knows all of this to be true. And then Samuel said, so why do you ask me, seeing the Lord has departed from you and has become your enemy? And the Lord has done for himself as he spoke by me, for the Lord has torn the kingdom out of your hand and given it to your neighbor David. Saul already knew all of this. Because, verse 18, you did not obey the voice of the Lord nor execute his fierce wrath upon Amalek. Therefore, the Lord has done this thing to you this day. So we have all the information of why this is happening. This is the path that Saul has walked in that's coming back now to be his judgment. What Saul needs is a change of heart. And it's just not going to happen. In chapter 24, when David showed him, I could have killed you last night. Here's the corner of your garment. Remember, he was ashamed. I'm the wicked one. You're the righteous one, David. I was coming after you, and look, you spared my life. You know, you're better than me. And he was ashamed of himself. And the same thing happened in chapter 26, verse 21, when he holds up the spear and the water jug and says, I could have taken your life, Saul. Saul goes, you're the righteous one. I've played the fool before God, he says there in 26. So he's very aware of the problem, just like he said here. You know, God's departed from me, so I'm trying to find another way to live. He knows the problem. But you see, awareness of the problem is the first step to the solution of coming to the Lord. It's not the whole solution. There's a lot of people that come to that place in their life where they realize they can't measure up to God's standard, when they realize their own sinfulness, but that's simply the first step. Shame is to teach us, listen, shame in our lives is to teach us about the holiness of God and our own sinfulness to bring us to repentance, right? 2 Corinthians 7:10, godly sorrow leads to repentance. Worldly sorrow leads to death, just simply being aware of the problem. So shame dealt with, if you can understand what I mean by this, shame dealt with outside of God's design for shame brings bad fruit. If we don't allow that personal feeling of inadequacy or guilt that we sometimes experience to bring us to his grace, then it can have a very complicated work in our lives where we begin to be ruled by that guilt or that fear. It can turn into depression. It can vent out in rage, running from God, suppressing the truth in unrighteousness. So Saul is not having a change of heart here, and life has become confusing and dark. He cannot find that secret place anymore. Because the secret place is not a location. It's not a way around. It's the very presence of God himself, Psalm 27 tells us. You and I, we need a change of heart. Actually, I think we need a new heart, and that's what we have in Christ. Like Psalm 51, right? Create in me a clean heart, O God, and renew a right spirit within me. It's not something that I produce. It's when I recognize that I'm to trust in God and surrender to him. He replaces that, gives me a new heart, a clean heart, a right spirit with him. So we see this downward spiral with Saul. The disobedience turns into a tormented life. He has an evil eye towards David, envy towards David. He's an enemy of David, who's God's anointed, and he's an enemy of God, rationalizing evil, seeks darkness for help, and it ends in condemning judgment, ultimately leading to the loss of his life. I want to read you a scripture about the downward spiral of sin that James records here in James chapter 1. I'm going to read to you from verses 14 through 16, just a short few verses. James 1, 14 through 16 says, but each one, well, before that, he says, we can't be tempted of God. God does not tempt us, nor is he tempted. But each one is tempted when he is drawn away by his own desires and enticed. Then, when desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin, and sin, when it is full grown, brings forth death. Do not be deceived, my beloved brethren. So this downward progression that we see in Saul's life is that downward progression of sin. It hooks us and just drags us away when we are tempted. So back in our story, Saul explains his situation. He rehearses his blind decisions, revealing that he's clueless. We get the reasons that he's being judged because he didn't destroy Amalek. And so by disobeying God's call, Amalek remained alive We're going to see in chapter 30 that the Amalekites are the ones that take Ziklag while David's away. And we're going to see that it's actually an Amalekite that kills Saul, right? So talk about things coming back to bite you. So Saul's disobedience just leaves him in this darkness. Where did we leave off? 19, moreover, the Lord will also deliver Israel with you into the hand of the Philistines, and tomorrow you and your sons will be with me. The Lord will also deliver the army of Israel into the hand of the Philistines. So he's going to be destroyed and judged by God in this battle because of his disobedience to the Lord. Verse 20, immediately Saul fell full length on the ground and was dreadfully afraid because of the words of Samuel. And there was no strength in him, for he had eaten no food all day or all night. And the woman came to Saul and saw that he was severely troubled and said to him, look, your maidservant has obeyed your voice, and I have put my life in my hands and heeded the words which you spoke to me. Now, therefore, please heed also the voice of your maidservant, and let me set a piece of bread before you and eat, that you may have strength when you go on your way. But he refused and said, I will not eat. So his servants, together with the woman, urged him, and he heeded their voice. Then he arose from the ground and sat on the bed. Now the woman had a fatted calf in the house, and she hastened to kill it. And she took flour and kneaded it and baked unleavened bread from it. And she brought it before Saul and his servants, and they ate. Then they arose and went away that night. So Saul is at the end of himself. He's realizing it doesn't look good for him, so he won't eat. I'm not going to eat anything, no way. And they had to compel him to eat. Meanwhile, so this is the next scene in the movie. We're back in chapter 29 with David. Then the Philistines gathered together all their armies at Aphek, and the Israelites encamped by a fountain which is in Jezreel. And the lords of the Philistines passed in review by hundreds, by thousands, but David and his men passed in review at the rear with Achish. Then the princes of the Philistines said, what are these Hebrews doing here? And Achish said to the princes of the Philistines, is this not David, the servant of Saul, king of Israel, who has been with me these days and these years? And to this day, I have found no fault in him since he defected to me. And the princes of the Philistines were angry with him. So the princes of the Philistines said to him, make this fellow return that he may go back to the place which you have appointed for him. And do not let him go down with us to battle, lest in the battle he become our adversary. For with what could he reconcile himself to his master, if not with the heads of these men? Is this not David, of whom they sang to one another in dances, saying, Saul has slain his thousands, and David his 10,000s? So that song of the maidens when David would come back in victory from the battle wasn't simply known only locally. It became David's reputation song. And the Philistines knew that that's what was said about David. They knew that Saul was pursuing him. But they said, we don't want to risk that he might want to return to Saul and kill us to do it. Verse 6, so Achish called David and said to him, surely as the Lord lives, you have been upright, and your going out and your coming in with me in the army is good in my sight. For to this day I have not found evil in you since the day of your coming to me. Nevertheless, the Lord's do not favor you. Therefore, return now and go in peace, that you may not displease the lords of the Philistines. Verse 8, I just am amazed at this. So David said to Achish, but what have I done? And to this day, What have you found in your servant as long as I have been with you, that I may not go and fight against the enemies of my lord the king? He's pushing it, is what we call it, you know. The Lord is delivering him from having to fight against the Israelis and against Saul. And he's kind of, what? You're not going to let me go? Why not? Why can't I go with you? I want to fight against your enemies. What if the king would have said, okay, all right, come on. No, really, I'll stay. Anyway, crazy. Then Achish answered and said to David, I know that you are as good in my sight as an angel of God. What a beautiful testimony. Nevertheless, the princes of the Philistines have said, he shall not go up with us to the battle. Now, therefore, rise early in the morning with your master's servants who have come with you. And as soon as you are up early in the morning and have light, depart. So David and his men rose early to depart in the morning to return to the land of the Philistines, and the Philistines went up to Jezreel. So Saul's consulting a medium. The Lord shows up in Samuel or whatever and tells him, this is it. You're going to be with me, you know, and you're going to be judged because of your disobedience. He's broken and ruined. Meanwhile, David is trying to figure out how to get out of this situation, and the Lord delivers him. So David is among the Philistines who are ready to attack Saul. He's recognized for who he is, and he's rejected by the Philistines. Let me just take a quick application here. When, as believers living in the world, when we try to look like the world, we complicate our lives. And in order for the world to accept you, if you know of a believer who's trying to lay low and look like, I'm not one of them Christians, you know, but they are a Christian, the day will come when they would have to prove to the world that they are an enemy of Christ. If someone doesn't do that, they are recognized as a believer in this world. Living in that gray area is very dangerous. You can lose everything. You can lose your perspective. There in verse 8, you know, what have I done? He doesn't understand that the Lord is delivering him from having to be in this situation. And I would just say this, the Lord uses the world's rejection to rescue us sometimes. When you're in a situation as a believer where the world is singling you out, sometimes that's God's deliverance right there. When Mary gave her life to Christ, we were high school sweethearts, you know. So I watched her give her life to Christ, and she had friends that weren't believers, and there was a party that all of her friends were going to be at, and she said, Chris, I think I want to go to that party. And I said, I don't think you should go. She goes, it'll be okay. I just want to see my friends and go to this party. I'm not going to do anything stupid. So she went to the party, and sure enough, some of her good friends started to mock her because she had become a Christian. And they were saying, you know, let's try to get the Christian drunk. And she had another Christian friend that she ran into there in tears. And, she told her friend what all had happened, and her friend went, because they were out front, and her friend said, okay, I'll be right back. I'm going to go in for a while. And her friend went in, and Mary left. If I remember correctly, right, you left the party after Jenny had gone inside. And Jenny stayed. Didn't go so well. But that immediate rejection, because you're now no longer of this world. We are not of this world, just like Jesus isn't of this world. So sometimes simply the world's persecution and rejection is a rescue to us, even from ourselves. And God uses that to direct us. So David's plan, this thin thread holding his life together. He's amongst the enemies of Israel, hiding, deceiving, trying to be undercover there. That string is so thin now, it's snapped. And he's going to have to fight against Saul. but God intervenes and rescues him out of it. This is what God does for us. So many times in my life, I would say God has intervened and rescued me from myself. So here we see David. He's risking everything, even without realizing it. And he's spared from fighting Saul. And his David and his men are told to return to Ziklag. And we're going to take a break right there. We're going to end early tonight because I want to include chapter 30 and 31 together. So we'll pick it up there next week because it's very interesting what happens when David gets back to Ziklag.